This is The Headline with Brandon Waltons, where we talk about the biggest stories from across Texas. Hello, everybody. Welcome to The Headline. I'm Brandon Waltons, the managing editor here at Texas Scorecard. And the big question, are Democrats really in control of the Texas legislature? I sat down with State Representative Brian Slayton earlier this week to talk about that. We're going to get to that in just a few moments. But first, a Central Texas school district, again, roiled by controversy. Here to discuss the details, we've got senior journalist Jacob Asmussen. Jacob, thank you so much for joining us. This Round Rock ISD story, it's something we've talked about. Texas Scorecard has followed very closely. But for folks who may not have seen what has been happening there over the last few months, give people a little bit of a summary.
Yeah, and this is an important story for parents across the state. It really traces back to last summer when the Round Rock ISD School Board controversially hired Dr. Hafid Azaiz as the new superintendent. That's really kind of the root point of this whole saga. Community members had objected to him, saying that the school board kind of rushed the whole decision, did it all in closed session behind closed doors, didn't really understand why they chose this man as the new superintendent. Well, only less than a couple months later, he started facing serious allegations of domestic assault, and the board members started facing allegations of covering it up, and that sparked this whole months-long saga of incidents such as the board blocking parents from a public meeting, even arresting concerned fathers. I mean, there were incidents that made national headlines here. And so after 6 months of public outcry incidents, the school board finally placed Azaiz on administrative leave.
Paid, right?
Paid $30,000 a month on paid leave while the Texas Education Agency and the local sheriff's office investigate them. And so it's been this whole saga, which led up to last night at a board meeting. There was question, are they finally going to do something about his employment? Well, they delayed it yet again.
Yeah, but my understanding, right, was when they had their board meeting in January, there was a lot of buildup. Were they going to take action then? And the outcome was essentially, okay, we're not going to do it right now, but February, like this is when it's going to happen. And yet when they finally put on the agenda, this wasn't on the agenda. And in fact, they actually rejected an effort to put it on the agenda last night.
There were two board members last night, Mary Bone and Daniel Weston. They've kind of been the voice through this whole saga, wanting transparency with the public, asking questions. They last night tried to put a few items on next meeting's agenda, including possibly terminating his contract. And they also included efforts to investigate several of the board members for potential abuse of authority. Well, all of those, of course, got shot down. But it's interesting to see that the board is ride or die with the superintendent for some reason. We don't know why. There have been all these questions throughout the past few months of why aren't they doing it? Why aren't they at least investigating this? Why are they seemingly covering it up?
And right. It took the TEA really coming in, you know, the state authorities coming in to investigate for them to even begin their own independent investigation. And at this point, it's really not just allegations. You had an exclusive release earlier this week of actual documents showing this behavior from Azaiz.
Yeah, really shocking documents. It was the alleged domestic assault victim, her application for a temporary restraining order, a court document. And in that document, she details, in her own words, the entire statement of what happened and how board members were even involved in protecting the superintendent. And so many questions. But what's really a key takeaway from this whole saga is that if this kind of stuff is happening in Round Rock, which has long been known as a safe and suburban district outside of Austin, right? Conservative in elections. If this kind of stuff is happening in Round Rock, then what is happening in your school district and parents across the state, their school districts? I mean, there's more than 1,200 school districts. What is happening in your district if this kind of stuff can happen here?
Yeah, it's hard to believe that Round Rock is just this anomaly, yep. right? And that's why I know you put so much work into recently doing the Round Rock Exposed series, which is up at texasscorecard.com. Folks can check that out. Check out that podcast series that really goes into a lot of the details that we don't really have time to go into now. But before you go, I do want to talk about one other story real quick, which is in the city of Austin, surprise, a city controlled by Democrats. You've had a series now, I think, what, three boil water notices in the last 3 or 4 years at this point. I mean, is Austin now a third world country?
I mean, it's the nation's 11th largest city, mm-hmm. right? And we can't get the water supply, right? Which, very concerning. Like you said, three boil water notices in the past 4 years. The first one was because of heavy rains caused equipment problems. Okay. Apparently, there was too much water.
I can't really follow that, but maybe we give them that one.
Maybe.
Okay.
Okay. So, and then the second one was last year during the winter storm. The power went out, which happened across the state, but the staff at a water treatment plant didn't know how to turn on the backup power switch. Mm-hmm. So because of that, more than a million people went without mm-hmm. water. And then this most recent one was because of a staff error at one of the plants. They added too much mixture to the treatment process, and it caused cloudiness in the water. And again, roughly 1 million mm-hmm. people had to boil their tap water before drinking.
You really don't see this out of the other big cities, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you see this sometimes in small areas, and it's not due to, I mean, you know, it's one thing to laugh, especially if you don't live in Austin, right? That, okay, this kind of incompetence. But it's not because of a lack of money. I mean, they're raking in taxpayer dollars every year.
I mean, they've raised property taxes on the average homeowner more than 150% in the mm-hmm. last decade. And they spend roughly double per man, woman, and child than cities like Dallas or Houston. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you have this city government, this Democrat city council, who is just pouring out money mm-hmm. left and right, and yet the most lifeline service in the city, the water supply, can't get that correct.
That's all about priorities. That's that liberal governance for you. Thank you for filling us in, Jacob. And speaking of liberal governance, do Democrats really control the Texas House? As I mentioned, I sat down with State Representative Brian Slayton to talk about exactly that. Check it out. Representative Slayton, thank you for joining us. And I want to start off with a major question, a big question that we get repeatedly, which is, in the Texas legislature, are Democrats in charge?
Well, in a lot of ways, yes. When you think about that, they're in the minority, but yet the person they want for speaker is always chosen in the past few years. I mean, it's hard to say they're not in charge when the person they want is speaker's there. And then also, just based on how some things operate, it appears items they can't stop with votes, they somehow get stopped. So I would say it's hard to say they're not in charge.
Well, one of the really tangible ways that this plays out, of course, is that Democrats are being put in leadership positions. I know that this has been a major issue for you, especially when you went into your first session last year. Tell us a bit about that fight.
Yeah, well, it just seemed like a common sense solution. As I run around and talk to voters, you know, this is not rocket science. I don't have to pull out charts and graphs and statistics and explain why we don't need Democrat chairman. I just simply tell them, you know, do you know, as we have Republican majority in the House, we give chairmanships away to Democrats. And instead of trying to get 76 votes to kill a bill, they only have to have that one. That one chairman can kill a bill. And so I felt like it was worth trying to change the practice that had been going in the House, because I understand what's happened in the past. But when you look at the makeup and the culture of the Democrat Party, I guess the big example to me was what they did in Virginia. When the Democrats were in charge in Virginia, what they did, they just went ruthless, pushing their progressive ideology, no hold bar. Well, I feel like they'd do the exact same thing here in Texas if they were in charge.
Right.
And because that's just the nature of where things are. So we need to make sure we're at least advancing our agenda. And, you know, that's where it came from, was standing up for our agenda when other states were advancing the left's agenda.
And you made this an issue even before you got sworn in, right? Because at the time, looking at, there was a speaker's race at the time with then Speaker Dennis Bonin leaving a vacancy. And this was a major criteria for you as you were looking at some of those potential candidates that were looking at leading the chamber.
Oh, yes. So it frustrated me. I mean, I campaigned when Joe Strauss was speaker, when Bonin was speaker, saying this needs to stop. And it drove me a little crazy listening to people defend the idea of keeping Democrat chairman in the Texas House. And then when we get to the general election, they all campaign how they're going to stand up to the left. You know, Joe Biden, his agenda, or Barack Obama and his agenda. We're going to stand up to them. But if those same people were in the Texas House, they'd make him a chairman. And the intellectual honesty in that conversation doesn't mix. If you really have a problem with the DC Democrats, you probably have a problem with the Texas Democrats. And then the Texas Democrats proved it for us whenever they broke quorum. Where did they go? Who did they run to for help? They went to all the DC Democrats that we are told are a radical left-wing agenda that we need to stand up to. And it just doesn't make sense why it's only okay to talk tough and stand up to DC Democrats. But in Texas, we have to make sure they're in leadership. I don't understand that. And that's why I fought to change that practice.
Yes. And so tell people about that specific fight. This is one of the first days of the legislative session. The House is crafting its rules. And you, as you know, as a freshman who, right, is supposed to just be sitting back and shutting up, right, kind of brought the place to a halt with a series of proposed amendments.
Yes. Well, and to the point of sitting down, shutting up, I don't see that anywhere in the Constitution that that's the role of a representative. Our founders intended on there being turnover and intended on the districts to remain. And each member was there to represent their district, not wait on permission. And so that's how I operated. But yes, so what I actually did is I turned in the amendment over a month early. They asked for them. And so I turned in the amendment that said there would be no Democrat chairman. And then I didn't tell anyone that I had another amendment till the day before. I had some members, Republican members, asking me to take that amendment down. And in that meetings where I told them I had another amendment that would just protect the most important, you know, like appropriations and business and industry, education, transportation, calendars, state affairs. I was protecting more of those committees and still allowing Democrats to chair others. I thought that might be a little bit more palatable for them. So I presented that first one and no one said a word to me. I emailed it in. I made sure I got it in on time. Not one person communicated with me till a day before. And then those members that wanted to get me to take it down, I then told them I had another one and they were not happy to find out. They were hoping to end the conversation where I pulled down the amendment and didn't move forward. Instead, they found out I had a second one. And what I was doing, I was like, hey, one of these have to probably fit well for your district better than the other. Just vote for the one that you think your voters will like, was kind of my attitude with it. But yeah, I put those forward and the room seemed pretty cold. Like it was already planned. They were all just going to vote no. And it was supposed to be humiliating that no one voted with me. And they just didn't understand that if I believe something's the right thing to do, I don't care if I'm the only one, I'm going to do it. And I don't care about what they think is embarrassment. I just believe in doing the right thing. And it's okay. You know, nobody's perfect. And sometimes we'll do things to embarrass ourselves and to different crowds. But that's not what should drive what we do. So that's what happened there. I will tell you this also. I submitted both of the amendments that morning. And I asked the parliamentarian which order they would give these amendments to me. And they said, well, we don't know. I said, well, I submitted them in this order so that maybe they would be presented in the same order. If that changes, will you please tell me? And they said, yes, we'll tell you. Well, I went up there. They didn't say a word to me. So I assumed that the amendment was the order I had given, and they didn't give me an amendment to read or nothing. They just said, Slayton lays out the amendment. Mm-hmm. And so I went up there and started talking about one, and it was the other. But they're not that different in the amendment, so it wasn't that big a deal. But they did try to mess with me there. That was something they did to try to embarrass me, that somehow I didn't know which amendment I was laying out. And it just shows you how time changes, right? We're 13 months from there. This is a ballot initiative that all Republican voters are going to vote on. This is, I mean, people were mad about it, but no one discussed it. And a freshman files the amendment. Parliamentarians mess with them and trying to, you know, just try to add to it. And despite all them, I guess, having their plan to just vote no against it, and despite the parliamentarian, which I believe, you know, gave me those in different order and didn't tell me when they told me they would, here it is. It's a statewide issue. And I've gained a lot of support over this issue and over the push. And, you know, it's just funny how time changes. But yeah, that there wasn't a great deal of push. I know, I remember on the House floor, there was a couple members that were trying to embarrass me on the front and the back mic. And I just, you know, I figured that. I knew it was going to happen. And it was just also odd to have Republicans be more upset about this than the Democrats. The Democrats didn't say a word to me.
Well, you mentioned this becoming a statewide, kind of a statewide issue. We're seeing this become an issue in some of these campaigns. One of the biggest responses, though, that the people who voted against this amendment, who voted to put Democrats in charge, is they say, well, we don't want Texas to be like Washington, D.C. What's your response to that?
Well, how does making them chairman, how does it make it different than D.C.? We have in Washington, D.C., we have the left, whether they're in control or not, they still control D.C., right? We get Republicans in charge, we get a Republican speaker, and they don't advance Republican policy. The Democrats control them, in my opinion, because they're just worried about the next election. And then here in Texas, they say that if a Democrat is a chairman, somehow we're different. No, we're not. When the Democrats broke quorum over election integrity, right? The issue that caused them to leave the state of Texas was a RPT priority and election integrity. And where did they go? Our Speaker Pro Tem and numerous chairmen and vice chairs, they went to Washington, D.C. So you can act like the fact that we give them a chairmanship that we're, and then you can brag on yourself and say, hey, look at us, we're different than D.C. But what happens when the actions of these Democrats are identical to the left in D.C.? They stopped gender modification of children. They were trying to stop election integrity. They fought us on religious liberty issues. They fought us on everything, on constitutional carry, the heartbeat bill, everything. They fought us on. The only difference, instead of fighting us as a minority in the chamber and having to use the rules and procedures of the House to fight as a minority party, they were able to fight with some ace in a hole, you know, a trump card, so to speak. They had a chairman that could kill somebody's bill. They could use that as a threat to say, I'm not going to give your bill a hearing if y'all move forward with this or move forward with that. And so it actually gave them more leverage to fight us by giving them chairmanships. And you know, this desire to look different than D.C., why don't we stand up to D.C. more? There was opportunities in the Texas House to stand up to Joe Biden in D.C., and it was squished. Absolutely. So I don't understand. I haven't heard anybody say that myself. So you're telling me people are saying that. There's two things. Why is it so important for them to have a chairmanship? Think about it. If we got 83 Republicans and we got, what, 30-something committees, that means there could be more Republicans with chairmanships. So we got Republicans in the Texas House that would rather have Democrats have the chairman than themselves. Mm-hmm. What does that say about Republican leadership in general in Texas? We have elected officials who, instead of, I want to help lead on whatever issue it is, you entrust me with that committee, I want to help lead. Instead, they, I guess, attack me for proposing the amendment, and they vote against what I would guess what their district wants. We'll see as the election comes out on March 1st. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't make sense to me. I mean, I guess it sounds good in a soundbite for five right. seconds, but it doesn't fit with, if you are concerned with the state of our nation and the direction we are going, how are we going to stop it? How are we going to turn it around? How are we going to advance our agenda as long as we give Democrats more power than they earn on election day? Right. And I just feel like, we're setting ourselves up to lose. It's almost like we're tying one arm behind our back and then wondering why we can't beat them in the boxing match, you know?
Real quick, last question. What do you see in this issue going forward? Obviously, we've got the Republican Party of Texas's ballot proposition, so we'll get a survey of Republicans on this issue here in the next couple of weeks. But, you know, what is this fight going to look like when the legislature returns?
Yeah, well, I've tried this whole time to be sensitive to the desires of Republican voters. That's the way I've approached my time in office. So come March 1st, if Republican voters don't like this idea and they vote it down, I'm probably not going to say much about it, even though it frustrates me. But if Republican voters around the state of Texas want this issue, and the Republican Party of Texas, they, with the delegates, they give this as a RPT priority, you can pretty much guarantee I'm going to file the amendment again. And I'm going to continue to push the issue because it's what Republican voters want. And so that's really all I can say is if I feel like it's the will of the people, I'm going to help push for it.
Excellent. We'll look forward to watching that. Thank you so much for joining us, Representative Slater.
Thank you for having me.
Well, again, thank you so much to State Representative Slayton for joining us for that. That's about all we've got here for the headline. A couple housekeeping things. Texas Scorecard is hiring. If you're interested in joining the team here, you can go to texasscorecard.com/opportunities to learn more about what positions are available. And if you're between the ages of 18 to 25 and are interested in spending time with us here, learning how things go on here in 1836 Studios at Texas Scorecard, all of it, you can go to texasscorecard.com/fellowship to apply. If you're 18 to 25 or you know someone who's 18 to 25, please send that link on. Well, that's going to do it for us here. Have a great weekend. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for listening to The Headline from Texas Scorecard. We're live every Friday at 11 a.m. on the Texas Scorecard Facebook page to talk about the biggest stories of the week, so check us out there or listen to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, whatever platform you prefer. And while you're there, you can also check out the ever-growing line of podcasts and programming provided by Texas Scorecard.